Now, it's good to see you. We're talking on a new series today, Gimme, 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 Gimme. We're looking at what it means to be entitled. It's not an American attribute, it's a people attribute. It goes way back to the beginning of time. We're going to be looking at some of the classic stories in the Bible of people who had an entitlement mentality. And we're using entitlement only in the negative form of it during throughout this series. And I know it's something that I have to personally struggle with and try to keep away. I constantly am thinking that there's more that should be coming my way. In today's Inquirer, there'll be all those little colorful ads trying to tell us that we need more than we have right now. And I see this ad, for instance, in this weekend's Inquirer, I believe, of Best Buy right here. And maybe it's over this one. Yeah, there it is. Best Buy here. And you can see, man, I need that television. Yes, I still don't have a flat screen television. I have a nice one, maybe better than yours, but I still don't have that flat screen television. I need it all. I need it now. Now, if you notice here, one of the interesting ads that goes on in this ad is this right here. This Best Buy, you happier. You're entitled, you happier. See, we'll all be happier if you just get more than you have now. We're looking at getting more stuff, getting more relationships, getting more family, getting more friends, getting more promotions, getting more blessings and drippings from God. That's what we're looking at today. So let's pray before we go any further. God, I pray that you would help me to communicate what is on your mind, what's on your heart. And I pray that the words that come out of my mouth, though they certainly will be in my personality, but they will be rooted in your truth and in your integrity. So help us to see you with eyes that we haven't seen and to sense you with hearts that may have gone cold. And I pray these things according to your character. Amen. Well, the Bible is filled with examples and stories of people who felt like they would be happier if only something else came their way. All that's missing from their life is what is justly due them. All that is wrong is because somebody is holding out on them. Perhaps even God is holding out on them. So we're going to look at one of the classic stories in the Bible today. It comes from the book of Genesis, the very first book in the Bible. And it's a story of Jacob and Esau. Jacob and Esau have a mom and a dad. Their names are Isaac and Rebekah. And Isaac is the son of Abraham, who is the father and instigator of the entire Jewish nation. And as the cultural expectation of that day is that the son, the oldest son of any family, has a right to the lion's share of the inheritance. It is the oldest son that has a responsibility of carrying on the family name, the oldest son that has responsibility of tending to the family estate, the oldest son that gets what's called is the blessing as a result of the birthright, what is theirs by right of birth in their culture. So before these boys are born, God comes and visits Rebekah and says this to her in Genesis chapter 25 verse 23. The Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other. The older will serve the younger. Now this is very important to understand here, that God is not just predicting what's going to happen. God is telling her how he wants it to happen. This is an oracle. God saying, this is my plan. The plan is this. Normally, he says to Rebekah, you know, the oldest son, that's the one that is the leader. The oldest son, that's the one that gets the lion's share of the inheritance. But in this case, I'm going against the grain of the culture. I'm going against the grain of society. It is the younger one that is to be the leader. It is the younger one that's supposed to get the birthright. Now, this is totally radical. This is totally outside the norm of what they expected. And sometimes God does do things in us that are outside the norm of the cultural conditions. This is where entitlement comes from. What is entitlement? We're going to look at the difference between engagement and entitlement. Engagement is when I work for possibility. Engagement is when I decide that I'm going to work, I'm going to go after something and open up possibilities. Entitlement, the definition we're using, is when I am expecting prosperity. I'm just expecting good things to happen. So you would be expecting, if you were Esau, if you were the older one, you would just be expecting, yeah, good things should happen to me because I'm the oldest son. I want to get us to a place where we are engaging, we're working for possibilities. When we work, it doesn't mean it necessarily comes to us. Otherwise, that's a form of entitlement. Sometimes we work and it doesn't come to us. Now, as God gives this word of information to these folks, an interesting thing happens as these sons are born. Here's what it says in verse 24. When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. That's the kind of baby you want to have right there. Yeah, that's absolutely. Yeah, you ever like go to visit somebody's baby and everyone's going, oh, so cute. You look at the baby, you're like, he's nice, you know, and I can't say cute or you would be lying. That's kind of like Esau's. He's red and hairy. Yeah. So they named him Esau, which means hairy. Some of you are named hairy and you may be hairy because you're hairy. After this, his brother came out and his hand grasping Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. Sometimes when I pray, as I mentioned last week, I'll pray and end my prayer with, according to the character of Jesus, I pray, amen. To pray according to the character of Jesus, the same thing that is meant in the Bible of praying according to the name of Jesus. We're not supposed to pray and say, in the name of Jesus, I pray, amen, as if that's a good luck charm. What the Bible is teaching us to do is to pray the way Jesus would pray. To know somebody's name is to know their identity. It is to know their character. And we see this happen right here in the ancient world. To know Esau is to know something about his character. You know Esau? You know he's hairy because his name means hairy. To know Jacob, they named Jacob because there's something about his character. Jacob means one who grasps the heel. Jacob comes out, he is a grasper, he is a striver, he is a hustler, he is an engager. The dude has a work ethic. He's unhappy to come out second. He's fighting his way out of the womb, clawing, trying to get ahead, so much so he's grabbing onto his brother's heel to give himself extra leverage to pull himself out of the womb. This is a very good characteristic. Now, if you've been to church before, you've heard somebody talk about this story, I'm going to guess that you've heard it wrong. I'm going to guess you've heard it wrong because the way this story is commonly interpreted is that Jacob is the usurper. He's a deceitful one. And at the beginning, he's just a bad guy. He's like trying to claw his way out of the room, claw his way out of the womb. He is not portrayed here at all as a bad guy. He is portrayed as a guy who is engaging, who's working, who's hustling, who is going forward. And now we see these personalities of these kids play out as they start to grow up. They start to grow up, and Esau becomes a guy's guy. He becomes his dad's favorite. He likes to hunt. He likes to kill things, as any stereotypical male does. He likes to go out and hunt, and he's out. He's always going out and hunting and killing things and bringing them back in. Now, Jacob, he's sort of got some stereotypical feminine qualities about him. He's hard and he's driven, and he's got some stereotypical feminine qualities. He likes to cook. He's a mama's boy. His mom likes him, and Esau is liked primarily by Isaac. And so one day Esau's out hunting, and Jacob goes out and he sets up camp. He starts cooking stew somewhere between where Esau is hunting and the house. And Esau comes in and he's hungry. He's dragging his game with him. He's hungry. He doesn't want to wait to get home to eat. He doesn't want to get to home to cook his own meal. He's hungry right now. Right now, he says, hey, Jacob, how about some of that stew right now? Can I have some? And here's the story picks up, verse 31. Jacob replied, well, first, sell me your birthright. Look, I'm about to die, Esau said. What good is the birthright to me? But Jacob said, swear to me first. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. Jacob gives him lentil stew, not beef stew, because that would mean he had to kill something. No, he just picked things. Picked things and put them in the stew, cooked them. And Esau has a thing where he gives up his birthright. Again, the birthright is the cultural expectation, what is yours as a right of birth as a first son, that you would be the head of the family and get the lion's share of the inheritance. Now, some people, this is where people start to misunderstand Jacob. Because you look at Jacob and you say, man, his brother's hungry. The guy's hungry. Why don't you just give him the stew? I mean, why do this bartering back and forth? Just give the guy stuff. Hey, giving things away is a wonderful and good thing. We believe here at Crossroads in giving things away. That's why we don't want to sell anything. We give coffee away. We give CDs away. We give Bibles away. We give experiences like this away where there's music and stuff that you never have to buy a ticket to come and experience. We give MP3s away on the web. I go on and on. Growth opportunities and seminars, all kinds of wonderful giving things away. Nothing wrong with that. We like that. It's awesome, awesome, awesome. But some people have negatively judged Jacob that he's somehow dastardly because he's trying to trade something. He's bartering. Hey, anybody here ever get a paycheck? Anyone get a paycheck? Raise your hand if you ever get a paycheck. Are you evil because you get a paycheck? No, you're bartering. You're trading. You're trading your time for a paycheck. You're trading services for goods. It's called business. That's what it's called. Getting it done. It's called business. What Jacob does here is he just has a business transaction. He says, you can have some stew. How about your birthrights? Can I have that? God's already said, I don't know if Jacob knows this at this point or not, God's already said you're going to be the guy, but now Jacob is trying to get it legal, fair and square. He says, how about we trade this? And now Jacob gets a bad rap because he's not giving away. Hey, look, if you get a paycheck, you are not evil. It is a straightforward business transaction. The person here who has got the problem is Esau. He's so into personal immediate gratification, he can't wait a little longer to get home. I mean, home can't be that much further away. He says, okay, done. I'll take the deal. You can have the birthright. Give me some of that soup. In fact, the Bible here in this story, it's very clear in pointing the blame to who is the one who is dishonorable. Who is the one that if they've done anything wrong, it's Esau. Do you notice the last line in this verse? It says this, so Esau despised his birthright. He undervalued his birthright. The dude was lazy and unengaged. Look, a stew for the birthright. He undervalued, he despised it. If anybody here is at fault, it's Esau, not Jacob. But nonetheless, the transaction has happened. It's been switched. Now, one of the things that we find in self-entitlement, being entitled, four things today. One is this. It's that when we feel entitled, when we feel like blessings should just be coming our way, we lack self-awareness. We lack self-awareness. We're going to see that Esau lacks self-awareness. In fact, everybody in the entire family lacks self-awareness. Everybody in the entire family exhibits a level of entitlement. You ever notice that we always think it's the other person that has the negative sense of entitlement? You ever notice that? It's always the other person. So those of us who have health care, who don't want our taxes to go up, and see people who have health care and don't want our taxes to go up for people who quote unquote don't have health care, we say that those folks who feel like they should, that they are entitled. And yet those of us who are in poverty will look at the person who's a CEO who's getting the golden parachute and saying, look at that sense of entitlement. The thing that they are owed to them. A golden parachute for mismanaging a company. And then upper managers will look at middle managers who have a quote unquote sense of entitlement of having at minimum a cost of living raise every single year and say, no, they're the ones. They're the ones who are the entitled ones. We'll point to kids that think that they are born to have the right to a college education, and not only that, but a college education that their parents or somebody's going to pay for. And we'll look at them. If we don't have that blessing, we'll say, no, you're the one. It's always the other guy, isn't it? It's always the other people who are entitled. We did an exercise a number of years ago with staff members who have departed. There's a lot of people who've been on staff here and have left wonderfully, have left to do great things. It was an awesome thing if they went. They're doing better than they were here. There's a lot of great thing. When somebody leaves staff at Crossroads, it oftentimes is a great, great thing. And then there's also times when someone leaves staff at Crossroads that it's a great thing that they've left. That's also a great. So sometimes we have to invite people to leave staff over the last 12 and a half, 13 years or so. We did an exercise a number of years ago where we kind of named in a closed door meeting, we kind of put down all the folks that fit in the category of, yeah, it's kind of good that they're, you know, went on to other things. So we kind of put them down, and we then on their names, then across the top, we listed all the things that went bad in their employment. And as we thought about one person, say it's, you know, Susie Jane, you know, she couldn't show up for work on time, you know, bad punctuality, so-and-so, bad integrity, so-and-so, couldn't lead teams of volunteers, whatever. We had all of these sectors all across the top. And then as we went down through each person, we would put a check mark in all the sectors that applied to them. And there was one sector that we found that every person had in common who had left who was on that list. It was a lack of self-awareness. Well, self-awareness is when you see yourself, when you're aware of the real self. A lack of self-awareness is when you don't see yourself the way you really are. But everybody else sees the way you are really, but you don't see the way you are really. You know, don't you know that? Don't you know, like some folks, everyone's going, hello, why can that person not see that about themselves? It's a lack of self-awareness. And all of us struggle with this. And in fact, the more entitled you feel you are to good stuff happening to you, the more possible it is that you have a self-awareness. Entitled people, it's always the other person. It's always their fault, or it's always God's fault, or it's always the economy's fault, or it's never me. My marriage struggles has nothing to do with me. The fact that no one wants to date me has nothing to do with me. The fact that my kids are annoying has nothing to do with me. The fact that, no, it's all out there. It's something else. It's some conspiracy that's coming in. When you're entitled, you have a lack of self-awareness. Esau here has a lack of self-awareness. All of them have a lack of self-awareness. So as time goes on, we see that this family becomes increasingly dysfunctional. They come more and more strained in their relationships with one another to where they are fixated on only what they want. When you're entitled, only the blessing matters. That's all that matters. When you're entitled, you don't care about the process. You don't care about how you're growing. You don't care about what you're learning about God. You're not caring about what character formation God is working in you. All you care about is the end. Getting the thing that you want to come your way. And we see this years later as Isaac is growing old. He's growing old to the point where he can't see very well, and he knows that his run is just about done. So he wants to give the official bestowal of the birthright. That's called the blessing. When he brings in the child that is to get the lion's share of the inheritance, and he actually puts his hands on the child and gives them the blessing, the actual bestowal of all that is theirs by right of birth in that society. So he says to Esau, because he's his favorite, he says, hey, Esau, it's time. It's time for me to give you the blessing. And I'm reading between the lines here, but basically he says this, I really would like you to have it better than your brother, because you're always my favorite, and I don't really care that God already told me and your mother that, you know, Rebecca is going to have two nations, and the older will serve the younger. I don't care about that. I also don't care that there's been a fair business transaction and you've rightfully given it away. I don't like that. I don't like it at all. I want my boy to get this. So here's the deal. Why don't you go out and get me some food, come back in, and we'll eat, and then I'll give you the blessing, real sweet and simple. No one needs to find out about this. Sounds like a good plan, except that Rebecca overhears this. She's outside the door, she hears this, and just as Isaac thinks he's entitled to have his favorite son have the blessing, just as Esau thinks that he's entitled to have the blessing, even though he's given it away and traded it, so Rebecca thinks that she's entitled to have her favorite son have the blessing. She feels this isn't right at all. This is my boy. This is the one God said. This is the one who had the fair business transaction. She realizes it isn't right. And then she conspires to lie. She concocts this deceitful scheme. And so she goes and gets Jacob and says, hey, Jacob, just listen to what I just heard. Your dad's going to go behind your back, pull a fast one, and Esau's going to get the blessing and not you. Esau's now upset because he feels entitled. He's going, wait a minute, I had a fair business transaction. What, this is good. Here's going to happen. You go out. I'm going to get some food. I'm going to cook it up just like your dad does. And you go get some animal skins. Put them on you because you're a real prissy boy. You don't have any hair on you. You get some animal skins. Put them on you. And your dad can't see very well. And when he feels out to touch you, he'll feel the hair. And he's kind of losing it anyway. He'll assume you're Esau. And then he'll put the blessing on you and all is good. Talk about Jerry Springer family. This is just, one of the things I like about the Bible is it speaks to real life. You know, our families are jacked up, aren't they? I mean, in fact, if you don't see that your family has problems, then you are not self-aware. You are clueless. Hello, the clue phone is ringing. I mean, every family has some level of dysfunction. Man, this one just takes the cake. So here's what happens. He went to his father. This is Jacob. He gets the skins. He gets the soup. And in verse 18, he went to his father and said, "My father." "Yes, my son," he answered. "Who is it?" Jacob said to his father, "I'm Esau, your firstborn." You lie like a rug. "I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my gain so that you may give me your blessing." Isaac asked his son, "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" "The Lord your God gave me success," he replied. Wow. The dude is now so unself-aware and so only into the blessing that he lies. Not only has he lied now and said, "I'm Esau," but he actually brings God into it. He actually brings God into it. He accuses God of doing something he didn't do. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether or not you are really my son Esau or not." Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he blessed him. "Are you really my son Esau?" he asked. "I am," he replied. Another bold-faced lie. Then he said to him, "My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing." Brings him the game, puts his hands on him, bestowed the official blessing. Now Jacob is the rightful heir of society and of God, because when the father does that, no matter what kid he does it to, that is the one. Now, right after this, Jacob kind of leaves the room. He's leaving the room, leaving the tent. He passes his brother, who's on his way in. They look at each other kind of strangely. Esau comes in, and here's what happens. His father Isaac asked him, "Who are you?" "I'm your son," he answered, "your firstborn Esau." Isaac trembled violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came, and I blessed him, and indeed, he will be blessed." When Esau heard his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry, and he said to his father, "Bless me! Me too, my father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing." Esau gets bitter. Esau gets emotionally stricken. He shrieks, "Whoa, my brother did that. Oh no. Oh, would you please bless me too? Do you have more?" Dad says, "No, sorry, too much." You know what we find out about Esau, and we find out about all of us who are entitled? If the only time you get emotional is when you feel like you've been screwed, then you got problems. If the only time that you start trembling is when you feel like you're not getting something that should be rightfully coming your way, then it shows that spiritually you have problems. If the only time you lose sleep is when you feel you're getting the short end of the stick, you, my friend, are an unself-aware, entitled little baby. Wah, 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 wah. And it's also very likely that bitterness rules your life. Bitterness. When you're entitled, bitterness rules. You can't get over it. The only time you get emotional is when you feel like you're not getting yours, when somebody's being not right with you. And I know for me, this is a constant thing that I have to constantly work to keep at bay. My sense of entitlement will tell me and try to convince me that the larger Crossroads gets, the more cool things that should be happening to me, because after all, I'm kind of owed that, aren't I? My entitlement tells me that when I work a long day and I'm the primary breadwinner, that when I go home, my wife should really be catering and meeting my needs. Because after all, I'm the one who's a big breadwinner. My sense of entitlement tells me that my kids have never given me any money. I've only given them money, so the least they can do is obey me. Because that's the way it works, you know? I do this and you do that. My sense of entitlement tells me that if I take care of myself healthily, God, you better never bring any bad bug my way, because I'm taking care of myself. And you might be noticing, if you're bitter, it's because the sense of entitlement is ruling. You're going, "Man, why am I seeing the oncologist, God? What about her over there? 2 packs a day for 20 years. What is that about? God, what is this? I'm doing the right stuff here. I'm maintaining my sexual integrity, and yet I'm not the one that anybody is attracted to. Well, that person over there, they're always having the fun. Well, God, what is this? I'm the one who's staying late. I'm the one who's doing the stuff that needs to happen, and I'm the one who got laid off. This isn't right." There's a word that my kids, I've each heard them utter for the first time. And when they utter it, I go bonkers. I go ballistic. It's a four-letter word. It starts with a letter F. Whenever someone says that, it is just a bummer. You know what I'm talking about? We can say this word in church. Fair. That's the word, right? Fair. Fair. I've talked about this before. I'm going to talk about it again. Fair. Fair, fair, fair. See, one of the things I learned my relationship with God early on is that God doesn't go by fairness. He goes by grace. And if you think God goes by fairness, in fact, nowhere in the entire Bible does it ever say that God is fair. Nowhere. And so when he has that as no part of his character, and then we assume him to act fairly, then we're going to get bitter. We're going to get bitter. Now, there is such a thing as you reap what you sow. And there is something about God does notice what's happening and somehow he makes it right. There certainly is a reaping what you're sowing, and we need to be diligent. The more diligent we are, the higher likelihood we are that certain things are going to come our way. That's absolutely true. I just happen to think that we need to emphasize right now more often that God operates according to grace, and grace and fairness are in total opposition to one another. Grace says that God brings good people and bad people good things. Good people and bad people get good things. And inversely, good people and bad people will also receive some level of bad things. This life doesn't have a full accounting and a full tit-for-tat measuring. But fairness is this thing, this expectation that everything should be even said. Let me tell you something. I am so glad that God is not fair, because if God was fair and I got what I deserved, when I was about 6 months old, I would have been sent straight to hell. So I'm glad that God is not fair. I do not want fairness from God. Let me tell you, I do not want fairness. I'm totally content with the grace plan. I'll take the grace. I do not want you to give me all the stuff that I really deserve. That would not be a pretty scene. Would not be pretty. In fact, God, I don't want you to give me what I would give to other people if I were you. Because I would give them the thumb, like, just squash them down right there. I would. So each kid, we've had this scene right now. I'll just use my youngest one, Mariah, for a moment. Mariah will not like that she, you know, is not getting the right amount of Skittles or some such thing. And she'll say something like, "No fair!" And I hear this, "No fair." I'm like... And I go, "Fair? Fair? You want fair?" And she's going, yeah, you want fair? Now, my other two kids have seen this bit. They both had this. They both experienced it. They see what's going on. And they're sitting there going, no, you don't want fair. You don't. Fair! Mariah, you want fair? Okay. We'll do fairness. Here's the deal. Mariah, no more food for you. We're not going to cook you any more food until you cook us food. In fact, we're not going to buy you any more food until you buy us food. You got to catch up, because fairness is quid pro quo, even Steven. It's got to be even. See, one of the ways I was cursed when I was a little kid with my dad is my dad's a big fairness guy. So like when he would like pour glasses when he was a little kid and in Depression era, he would pour glasses. And the rule of the family was the guy who was pouring got to choose last which glass to take. So he would always make sure it was absolutely even, Steven, perfect. And today this still curses me. My wife gets so mad at me because if I'm pouring like wine or something like that, I'm always trying to make sure it's perfect. Like Esau, then she gets so annoyed. And of course, then I always take the more full glass anyway. But she gets really, really bothered by this fairness thing is, you know, so I'm extra sensitive to it. It's in me. I don't like it. So the Mariah, fair. Okay. So you don't get any more food until you make food for us. Oh, Mariah. How many times have you read me a bedtime story? Ever read me a bedtime story? I'll tell you what. No more bedtime stories for you until you read me a bedtime story. And Mariah, have you ever done any college savings for me? Have you done everything? I'll tell you what. I'm not going to save any money for your education until you start saving, because you got a lot of catch up to do. Mariah, have you ever driven me anywhere? Have you ever just like driven me over to my friend's house? You know, because it's hard to drive over to my friend's house. It's a bore, and I got to pay all the gas. I'll tell you what. From now on, I'm not going to buy any gas or drive you to your friends until you drive me to your friend. Oh, interesting. Mariah, how many times have I changed your diaper? How many times have I changed your diaper? How many times do you think I've wiped your rear end? Just take a guess. I said, Mariah, I'll tell you, here's the deal. Next time I'm going to the bathroom and I'm doing my deal, I'm gonna call up, say, hey, Mariah, I got some stuff for you to do in here. This actually works right here. I'm gonna say, hey, Mariah. Hey, Mariah, I need your help. You got to catch up right here. Come here. I need you. Mariah, you want fair?
No, I don't want fair. I don't want fair. No, I don't want fair.
And yet we do that with God. We just think God should be fair with us. We think God, and when we feel like He isn't fair, we're bitter. We're bitter. And it rules our life. It wipes us out. And this bitterness, this sense of entitlement, the sense that we should be having more than we're currently having, it wrecks every relationships. All of our relationships. Relationships break down. When entitlement's happening, relationships totally break down. Look at this family, this Jerry Springer family. Their family is completely ripped apart. Ripped apart. Jacob and Esau. Jacob spends the rest of his days running away from Esau because he knows Esau can use a weapon and he can kill things. He's going to spend the rest of his life trying to kill him. They have a little reunion that's kind of bittersweet towards the end of their life, but they are separated. Their relationship is ripped apart. Isaac and Rebekah, there's never any more communication than we see in the Bible. They never are talking with each other again. Daddy's boy, Isaac, Esau, they never see each other again the rest of their life. Esau goes off in a fit rage trying to enact vengeance, and he never sees his dad again. Rebekah, her little boy, Jacob, they never see each other again. Jacob is running for his life. This whole family is relationally ripped apart. And what's the worst thing of all is all of their relationships with God take a massive, massive toll. So what happens with us? Our relationship with God is ripped apart. It's like we keep expecting God to prove Himself to us. We keep expecting Him to like even the tally out. We think, God, how come I can't have a kid? How come I can't get a date? How come I got to go to the doctor? How come I got to pay college loans and the other person doesn't, who got C's and I got B's and how does that work? And God, how come I can't this and how come I can't that? And we get bitter with God and the relationship breaks down because we think that He owes, He doesn't owe you anything. He doesn't owe you jack. If anything, He owes you and me punishment. No, He still gives us grace, but the relationship breaks down. Now, later on, the New Testament portion of the Bible looks back on this. This is the last verse I'll read to you. Looks back on this whole story and gives us some things that we can all learn. It says this in the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verse 13. See to it that no one misses the grace of our God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. Many of us are missing the grace plan of God. We're trying to operate according to fairness, entitlements, and it's not working. And now bitter roots have overtaken our innards and have squandered and squashed and stifled our relationships, most important, our relationship with God. See to it that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau. Here again, it's saying Esau. He was, hey, you want to engage? You want to have a work ethic? You want to go after it like Esau, like Jacob did in the early days? Awesome. But even after going after it, even after exhibiting work ethic and type A behavior, don't you ever think that just because you're doing that, you're owed certain things to you. But hey, Esau just gave things away out of sense of entitlement his whole life, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. He squandered a single meal. Afterwards, as you know, when he wanted to inherit this blessing, he was rejected. He could bring about no change of mind, though he sought the blessing with tears. The only time he gets teary is when he's losing something. Is the only time you ever get emotionally distraught when you're losing something? Is the only time you get emotionally angst-ridden is when something might not be coming your way? Hey, the economy difficulty is significant. It's real, absolutely. But it's the only time that we're really angst-ridden is when something might not be coming our way. Because after all, as an American, I'm entitled to have, X, Y, Z. Is that really? In fact, let me just speak a little word of challenge to some of us. Some of us, we just feel like we're entitled to financial security. And you haven't lost your job at all. You're still making the same amount of income at all. But as a result, you don't feel secure. Are you cutting back on being a generous blessing to other people? Being a giver? Because you're entitled to feel a certain way you don't feel, so therefore you're going to cut it. See, this is all this stuff that seeps in and hurts our relationship with God. in our relationship with other people. See, when we get past this whole thing, and we say, God, if you want to give to me, wonderful. I love for you to give to me. That's great. But I'm never going to put you on the hook and assume that you're doing wrong if you don't give me the things that I would give if I were you. God, I'm praying that this whole series, we would have our character, our name be in line with you. That our name would start to be known as faithful. Our name would start to be known as joyful. Our character would be seen as one who is joyful regardless of the circumstances. Our character would be one of a stalwart. Our character would be one of smiling, of being okay, of having it well with our soul. I pray that you help us squash out and kick out those voices of entitlement that keep trying to make us distressed, keep trying to make us feel like you're holding out on us. God, help us get to another place. Help us to see your heart and your purity take root in us.